So I'll start with a review of an undeformed case, and then I'll consider gauge theory side. That would be essentially what is called least drastic deformation of Ankle 4 theory. And then I'll consider string theory, dual of that deformation, which was introduced by, essentially constructed by Lunyan and Baldassarre recently, and we discussed its string theory interpretation and semi-classical string states in this case. So let me start from the very beginning, and what I want to do is somehow also to give some introductory review, which would be complementary to what probably Nicholas Bizert and Matthias Taudache will be doing later on in this program. So let me start from the very beginning. What is the motivation for looking at the Ankle 4 theory? We would like to learn how to compute, first of all, solve an example of quantum conformal field theory in four dimensions, at least in planar limit. And very first question is how to compute dimensions of various operators, conformal primary operators, as a function of soft coupling, exactly. And then later on, hopefully, we can understand less supersymmetric theories. So the real question is what we can learn by from that example about exact properties of anomalous dimensions. And here we hope that integrability may provide some perturbative results, and integrability may provide a guide to guesses or conjectures or some kind of better ansatz about exact properties of anomalous dimensions. So we can use intuition from string side and gauge theory side combined together into some useful conjectures which we can check. So that was much of recent progress was along these lines. So it's very fruitful to look at semi-classical string states, and that will be the main content of what I'm going to talk about. And mostly I will be talking about what's called fast strings, which were discussed by Andrei Mikhailov yesterday. But there is also, we should keep in mind that there are various other string states, and I'll mention them as well, which will be more of a type of operators which are relevant in the context of QCD, and we hope also to learn some lessons which may be relevant for QCD. We know that integrability appears also in this context, at least approximate in some sectors. So what is important also to try to understand how much is how important is having supersymmetry for getting some exact results, how important is integrability. And motivated by these questions, we would like to also look at various deformations of standard Ankle 4 setup, maximally supersymmetric setup, and suppose we want to do something with S5. So look at other conformal field theories. So preserving ADS5 factor, what other string theories of similar type or gauge theories of a similar type we can look at? Obviously, we can look at orbifolds, but these examples are not particularly interesting from the point of view of semi-classical sort of string state story. We don't have new continuous parameters in this case. Now, we can also, much of recent literature was about various other conformal points, isolated conformal fixed points, where we can look at certain Ankle 2 theory, Ankle 1 theory. We can replace S5 by some Einstein, Sasaki Einstein space with T11. But in this case, we don't really know. We don't have calculational tools for computing anomalous dimensions. We don't have integrability. We also don't have continuous parameter like lambda. And so that's not what is the easiest starting point. And in fact, what one can try to do is not to change topology of S5. Rather, try to keep also soft coupling as free parameter, as we have in Ankle 4 theory, but introduce some deformation parameter, which I will call beta, and essentially replacing S5 by some deformed space. It can't be just Einstein space, and so to have regular space of the same geometry as S5, the same topology of S5, we need to introduce extra fluxes. And how to find such deformations is a priori unclear. And here, a very useful insight of Lunin and Baldassena was to try to use tools which were very simple tools which we know from string theory. Namely, we can start with S5, do some TDR transformation or shift coordinates by some beta, say mixed two angles with some parameter, and then do TDR again, and it turns out that that strategy leads to a regular space, S5 with sub beta, which is of the type which is what I was just trying to suggest, which we can look at. And even more remarkably, that leads to supersymmetric solution, supersymmetric string theory, which has one quarter of supersymmetry of maximal case, and it's apparently due to least Russell exactly marginal deformation of four-dimensional CFT. So in this case, we'll have two parameters, lambda and beta. This is Lagrangian theory, and beta we will need to tune to have it small in the large lambda limit. So semi-classical limit will, on string side, will involve having large lambda. So beta lambda, square root of lambda beta, it turns out to be fixed. I'll describe this in detail, but the moral of what I was just trying to say is that in addition to n equal 4 theory, we can look at this beta deformed theory. And it turns out that the story about matching between anomalous dimensions and energies of string states goes much the same way in this beta deformed case. So that's quite surprising because we have one quarter of supersymmetry in this case. We still will have integrability, but that seems to suggest that supersymmetry, at least in this particular case, is not that important for understanding this matching, which I'm going to talk about. So the usual story involves fixing lambda, taking n to infinity, and that's the only limit which I'll be considering. So that will be essentially free strings on the string side. On the string side, we'll take string coupling to zero, essentially. And string tension will be related to, in the usual way, to torque coupling, square root of torque coupling. Now, on gauge theory side, the basic question, what are the dimensions of various local operators? They will be functions of lambda and various other quantum numbers of these operators, like R charges. So we'd like to know how this function looks like. On string side, the similar question would be, in general, what are the energies of various string states? How they depend on tension and various other quantum numbers or oscillation numbers or other conserved charges. And ADS CFT statement is that delta should be equal to E. And clearly, there are various different perturbative expansions involved, and how much we can learn, how much we can test this relation, can we prove it in general, and what we can learn from looking at various limits, that's the main subject of what I'm going to talk about. And it's very useful, turns out it's very useful to concentrate on certain subclasses of operators, and we'll be taking semi-classical limit both on string side and a similar limit on gauge theory side and comparing the corresponding states. And in this limit, it turns out there's quite a lot of information one can extract on both sides and get some idea how this matching should be organized. So on string side, we can look at semi-classical strings. So it's basically classical solutions with large energy, with large quantum numbers like spins. So we can look at various strings which rotate in ADS5 or S5, pulsate, rotate. So the energies can depend on quantum numbers in various ways, and also they may depend on tension in very complicated way once we include quantum correction. So for example, we can have a pattern where energy goes as some quantum number like spin times some function of tension. Or the energy can go as some spin plus logarithm of spin at large spin. On gauge theory side, that would correspond. There are also similar patterns of anomalous dimensions. So if you look at operators built out of scalars of n equal 4 theory and their conjugate, you can have also dimension scaling like length of operator or some effective parameter like charge or length or which you can assign to this operator times some function of soft coupling or familiar, you know, dependence of anomalous dimension as canonical dimension plus logarithm. And that's what we've seen in perturbation theory for operators involving many covariant derivatives. On the other hand, there is a subclass of semi-classical states and long operators which happen to have very similar dependence of their energy in the respective dimension on quantum numbers. So if you have, if you look at string which rotates fast in S5 and at the same time also has maybe pulsating or having any other spin, so it rotates in several planes. And in fact, these strings were also discussed yesterday. For them, the energy, the classical energy, happened to have this particular dependence on the spin and on the tension. So what you see here is tension appearing as only as squares of tension. So the string tension is square root of lambda, but here you have only positive powers, or only integer powers of lambda appearing. So why that particular dependence? If you just think of what is the semi-classical parameter, it's essentially the frequency of rotation of a string. And the frequency is this curly J. And the spin is string tension, which appears in front of string action, times this frequency. So we assume this is large, and if you assume string tension is large, this is also will be large in semi-classical limit if J is fixed. And then quantum corrections, alpha prime corrections are small, and that's just classical energy. So there is an effective semi-classical parameter, this lambda tilde, or called lambda prime in BMN limits, which is ratio of lambda over J squared. So for these fast strings, what is important is to have one large angular momentum in S5. Turns out that that guarantees that the, each bit of the string is moving approximately along null geodesic. It's nearly like, locally, it looks like massless particle. So the world sheet is close to null surface, and this sector of strings happen to be very special. Now, they're special in the sense that there are similar objects, similar local gauge invariant operators appearing on gauge theory side. For them, dimension will go as canonical dimension plus perturbation theory in lambda, and then we can expand at large G. So we can take very long operator with large R charge, and so each term in expansion lambda we can then expand in G. And what happens is that this expansion in G is actually doesn't give you positive powers of J, but rather give you 1 over J powers. So that's a, due to special nature of such operators. So for example, I mentioned here example where you have positive power of L is the same as J. So if you would have J here, that would be that kind of pattern.
So here, for one minute, for
It may be also extended in S5, but the important point that it must have one large angular momentum in S5. So one large angular momentum in S5 is crucial to be to have this fast string property. Now, so what kind of operators I'm talking about here? In a sense, they can be called locally BPS operators. So they are built out of large power of one scalar, phi in power j. So that's a usual example of BPS operator. And there are the number of other impurities, sort of. There may be many of them, but they come in blocks which change slowly along the operator. It's a very long operator, and the changes in types of operators along the operator happen slowly. So in some sense, it's if you look at local bit of this operator, it will always look like BPS, phi in power j. So that's somewhat similar to thinking of a local bit of string here moving along now geodesic. So to make I'll make this more precise. So again, to stress, we look at very special, we look at special subclass of semi-classical strings that and special type of long operators. That's not a generic pattern, but for these kinds of operators and strings we have we will be able to make the matching between two sides quite precise. So what kind of limits we can consider in general? So there is a familiar BMN limit where we look at very small strings. With the center of mass orbiting along the big circle of S5. So this is an algebra designated S5, S5. And the string is small, so each bit of a string is kind of close to this geodesic. So these are nearly, these are short strings, nearly point-like. And you can think of them as having large one angular momentum, and the other angular momentum or any other quantum number is fixed. You take J infinity, J2 is fixed. Now the operators of that type, the BMN operators, have few impurities, phi2, and big chunks of phi1 in between. Well, phi2 can appear close, but the important point that phi1 goes to infinity by J2 is fixed. So the number of these phi2s is fixed. Now, there is another limit, which is kind of similar, but it's actually different in the sense that J2 is also scaled to infinity. Or there may be more of these spins which are scaled to infinity. So they're scaled to infinity together, but their ratio is fixed. So these will be long, fast strings. Not short, but rather long. They have many, their extension is kind of long. So these will be dual to long operators where you have many phi1s and many phi2s. But the condition will be that we are looking, we'll be looking only on very special type of such operators. What kind of operators where this change from one phi1 and phi2 will be happening only on macroscopic scale. Now, that can be phrased in a more precise way by looking at one loop dilatation operator, or in a particular SU2 sector of N equal 4 theory. It happens, this was an observation by Minahan and Zaremba, that in this case, the dilatation operator, which gives us anomalous dimensions of these operators, is essentially the Hamiltonian or Heisenberg ferromagnet. Written here. So if you look at spectrum of this system, which gives us anomalous dimensions of one loop anomalous dimensions of various operators built out of two complex scalars of N equal 4 theory, what we can have here, we start with usual ferromagnetic vacuum. That will be BPS state, just trace of phi in power j. J here is the length of this spin chain. And then above this vacuum are BMN, well, the magnon states turn out to be essentially due to BMN states. Their energy goes as 1 over j squared. So that will be lambda over j squared. This is familiar lambda prime parameter. Energy is just proportional to lambda prime, which generalizes to square root formula if we look at all orders in lambda. Now, above these magnons, there are states which may be called spin waves. And these are essentially the ones which we would like to talk about. So these will be due to classical strings, classical fast strings. So for them, energy goes as 1 over j, not 1 over j squared, but rather 1 over j. And these spin waves is a particular sector of states in this Heisenberg ferromagnet, and they can be systematically described by taking this thermodynamic limit of the corresponding Bethe ansatz, which gives the spectrum of the Heisenberg ferromagnet. And that limit, these Bethe equations become essentially integral equations, and they happen to be closely related or essentially identical to equations finite gap, equations which follow from finite gap description of spectrum of the corresponding sigma model which appears on string size. Now, there are other states which lie above these ones, but we just don't look at these operators. You can have operators which will, you'll have operators with energy scaling as J. And that will be this type of operators which will be more of a different kind from what we are talking about. So once, to summarize, we just focus on that particular subsector of operators. And these operators will happen to be due to these fast strings. So what is actually known about the energies and dimensions? So if you look at string size, we can look at classical, we can look at various classical solutions, and we can look at alpha prime corrections to the energies, and the general pattern appears to be the following. So the energy will go as, essentially the ratio of energy to J will be function of this effective parameter lambda tilde, which is essentially 1 over omega, 1 over frequency of the string, which is fixed in semi-classical limits. Now, semi-classical expansion involves its human intention is large, so alpha prime corrections are small, ratio of various ratios of other spins are fixed, and so that essentially translates into J being also large, because J is the J square root of lambda times J is tension times this frequency parameter. So what is boxed here are alpha prime corrections. So the first terms in this expansion are just coefficients, which are functions of this ratio J1, J2 in the simplest case, and that's the classical energy of this fast string. It depends on this effective parameter lambda tilde. Now, alpha prime corrections can be computed in principle systematically, starting with Green-Schwarz superstring action AES5S5. And that was done on various examples, one can actually compute these coefficients, which appear here, A2, B2, etc. These will be one loop coefficient from string theory side, one loop expression from string theory side. Now, on gauge theory side, the anomalous dimension of the corresponding operators have the following expression, which I mentioned already. If we just do plane perturbation theory, lambda is...
Has it actually been computed? Or what? You say A2 and B2?
Yes. Well, for particular solutions, not in a generic solution, but for... You look at particular solution, which is, say, circular string with two spins. You can quantize Green-Schwarz action, compute, in fact, the whole... all terms. So just like you can find the exact expression of classical energy, which is partly due to integrability of the corresponding sigmoid, you can classify these solutions, you can find explicit solutions in a rather useful way. So the same you can do for one loop correction for particular solutions. What is not quite clear how to do this for generic solutions, at least starting directly from Green-Schwarz action, it's obviously not clear how to do that.
So what computation
have you done on gauge theory side? Now, on gauge theory side, that's the general pattern, but...
So this is a different regime, right? So
yeah, that's a good... Yes, so these are two different limits, and I'm going to emphasize that, yes. So what is the limit which is considered on string side is semi-classical expansion. That means lambda is large, this effective lambda tilde parameter is fixed, J1, J2 is fixed. We can then expand in lambda tilde, and that's the meaning of this expansion. So
we expand in lambda tilde? Is it supposed to be an asymptotic expansion?
You can expand classical energy in lambda tilde. You may not do that. You may do that. It's just a function of this lambda tilde, the classical energy of a string. No, it's a well-defined expansion. Quantum corrections is at the moment appears to be a question. Whether that expansion,
or in perturbation
from there's no. If you do that expansion lambda tilde, that would be expansion sort of near null. Null surface, yes. But just to give you this kind of canonical example of this energy formula, if you look at string which rotates in two, just pure circle, rotating in two orthogonal planes in S5 with exactly equal angular momentum, J1 equal to J2. Again, these two angular momenta are two out of three which you can have for SO6 group rotation in S5. So the energy, the exact classical energy is just, it can be written as J times square root 1 plus some winding number, lambda tilde. So M is just how many times the string is wrapped around itself. So that's explicit formula. So you can expand it lambda tilde, there's nothing wrong about this expansion, and that gives you A1, B1, C1, etc. Then you can compute one loop correction to that formula, and that will go just as some function of lambda tilde. And that function of lambda tilde is given by some sum of characteristic frequencies, bosonic minus in Munich. And these are known explicitly, they're very simple. But the sum is infinite sum, so it's some function. This sum defines this function f1. And if you naively expand it in lambda tilde, you do get some strange. The first coefficient will be finite. And in fact, as I'm going to talk to say, that it matches gauge theory expression, but the second coefficient happens to be divergent, third coefficient happens to be divergent, so you really need to sum this series first before expanding lambda tilde.
In this particular case, both reading in J and subreading in J are some closed form expressions in lambda tilde. And here you're just writing that.
Yes. Yes, so that's essentially the meaning of this expansion, that I may not do that expansion lambda tilde, but to compare to gauge theory, I rather do this expansion, because the whole point is that just like in BMN limit, the similar expansion appears on gauge theory side. If the expression written here is actually identical, the structure is identical, if you multiply by J, remember that lambda tilde is lambda over J squared. That'll be exactly the same terms which appear here.
A priori, there is no reason
why that should happen. Moreover, on next transparency, I'll raise some questions about whether we know the rigorous proof of that. So we certainly know. No, these are exactly the same, because lambda tilde is lambda over J squared. If you multiply by J, just the way how I wrote it, to emphasize there is effective parameter lambda tilde. Yeah, I can rewrite it in the same way, in the same form.
So just that lambda is large.
Yeah, so here, in this expansion, lambda is indeed large. J is large, lambda tilde is fixed. Here, lambda is small, and we first expand in lambda, and then we expand in J, and we discover that for that particular subsector of states which I mentioned, which certainly are understood at one loop and two loops, where we have explicit expressions for dilatation operator, and one can... Yes. Yes. So, just to move on, there are different limits taken here and here. Here, you may also raise a question whether this expansion powers of lambda is meaningful, whether it's asymptotic. You expect it's not, but for Yeah, I better not say anything about it. But the coefficients which are marked by yellow here happen to be exactly the same here and here. So why that happens is an interesting question, but I stress that these coefficients are not just particular numbers, but rather functionals in the space of these fast string solutions or the corresponding operators. So these are really... the same for all solutions in this class. So the reason for why that happens, one can rephrase the statement that they are equal by saying that there are certain effective actions which describe these fast strings and the corresponding operators, which happen to be the same to first orders in this expansion. Now, third order, there is a disagreement between these coefficients, but the structure still is exactly the same. The structure of expansions happen to be the same, looks the same. Now, I'm not going to discuss why this disagreement takes place and...
Or why
agreement takes place. I would just say it looks like to have this agreement, we don't need to have the full n equal 4 supersymmetry, because I hope to discuss this beta deformed case where we have one quarter of that supersymmetry and still have the same statements will be true. What is apparently what is important is a rather restrictive structure of the effective actions or spin chains which you can have at that particular, at first two orders. And this restrictive structure somehow imposes constraints on what kind of terms may appear in this effective action which describes these terms. It doesn't seem to be exactly the same as non-realization theorems, or but this is not quite understood. So at the moment this is just observation that we get the same result. So what I want to stress is that this is not just classical string matching quantum Yang-Mills. In fact, these coefficients, as I mentioned, these are quantum string coefficients. So it's really quantum string matching quantum Yang-Mills result. So this, you should be surprised, you should be actually surprised by both expansions, why they take that particular form. So on gauge theory side, this is some certain scaling limit. So leaving aside the issue of whether coefficients match or not, one can raise the question why these expansions have that particular pattern. Now on gauge theory side, this pattern is sort of related to existence of BMN type scaling limit in these spin chains. But strictly speaking, there is no rigorous proof why that should be true to all orders in this lambda expansion. Why at higher orders in lambda you can have this, once you first expand to say 10th order in lambda and then take j to infinity, why you get exactly the corresponding power j in power, whatever it should be, 20 minus 1, why this anomalous dimension that order should be that much suppressed by j. That is essentially, if it's not the case, then we'll be having problem with BMN scaling, and it looks like there are not completely rigorous, but arguments that if BMN scaling is actually a property of this Enkel 4 theory. So I would again stress that we are looking at very special sector of operators or spin chain states, and this statement applies only to them. It's not a generic statement that whatever operator you write down will have this property. So the same question we can raise on string side, why we believe in this expansion, in this structure. And one can give qualitative arguments why that expansion should be organized that way. And one can directly verify at one loop that that's indeed the case. Now, the arguments are basically based on finiteness of this two-dimensional theory, which is hard to prove sort of in practical terms, because this is Green-Schwarz string, which you don't have a priori Rolle-Sheet supersymmetry. So you will need to make assumptions about how you actually regularize it, etc. But if you do computation, you can do computation one and two loops and in principle verify that. But the general argument is roughly looking at corrections to soliton mass in a finite two-dimensional theory on a circle. And then you can think of what kind of perturbation expansion you can have in terms of masses of various excitation modes. And corrections are suppressed by masses, 1 over m in some power. And that kind of argument can one can use it to justify that particular expansion. Now again, rigorous proof would be important to give. And another question is indeed whether this expansion, as written, is complete. Why can't we have some terms like exponents of this effective parameter? And it's not at one loop. In fact, it looks like there is some indication that may be the case. There may be some corrections which we'll need to interpret in some way. So
you have to know something like the 1 over j expansion. Again, you need to know the 1 over j expansion is asymptotic.
J is 1 over j, yeah.
If it's asymptotic, I don't think that's a very
mainstream. Yes, so that's, yes. So I completely agree. So this is really a story about functions of two parameters, lambda and j. On both sides, we're dealing with So there should be one single function on both, which matches from both sides. But we're doing different expansions, and that's a legitimate question. What are the properties? What are the properties of this exact function in terms of large J expansion or large lambda expansion, etc. I'm trying to say what is known, and I don't know anything about.
J expansion. I guess you don't know how those coefficients are growing, but if the 1 over J expansion is asymptotic, then I don't think it's a very meaningful question to ask if there are.
It's on string size, 1 over J expansion is alpha prime expansion, and a priori I don't know anything how it should what we should expect about to find. Now on spin chain, on gauge theory side, 1 over J expansion is a question about how energies of these beta ansatz, say one loop or two loop, etc., go with finite size of the spin chain. This is again a question which needs to be explored. I don't think there is an answer to that question in that particular limit where we consider expansion near thermodynamic limit. Now, as was mentioned, these are limits are different, and the reason for three loop disagreement should be, in fact, that we shouldn't really expect agreement in the first place. Generic pattern should be interpolation in lambda. So we do have similar structures on both sides, but at some point we may have functions of lambda appearing, and I will give examples for different states where that indeed happens. So generic pattern should be not precise matching in these two very different expansions, but rather functions of torque coupling which have different limits at large lambda and small lambda, give us different coefficients, and there are indications of that from explicit three loop analysis comparing what you get on string side and gauge theory side. And maybe Nicholas will talk later about that. Now, how this matching can, this leading order, first two orders in expansion can be demonstrated? And a very sort of heuristically appealing way to do that, which was suggested by Krushensky, is to look at certain effective field theory approach. So you can think of superstring and spin chain on gauge theory side as kind of microscopic theory, which is ultraviolet finite and describes that same system from two different ends. Now, you can look at effective field theory description for this class of semi-classical states or very long operators, and that happens to be essentially kind of what's called Landau-Lifshitz, non-relativistic Landau-Lifshitz type two-dimensional action. It's essentially that kind of action naturally appears from the ferromagnetic spin chain side. It describes this sector of these states, which is spin wave states. And turns out the same action comes out of string side, just by taking this fast string expansion of the classical string action, you get exactly the same action. So what that means that the states can be mapped one into one, and energies match, integrable structures match, charges match, and that can be extended also to next order in lambda or next order in expansion near this fast string limit. So it also remarkably works at quantum level. So what that means is that you can actually quantize this Landau-Lifshitz model, and you know that's certainly not the whole story on string side. You have fermions, you have in Green-Schwarz action, you have other modes which are outside of this particular SU2 say sector. But in the first few terms of the expansion, these other modes play the role of counterterms, or they provide sort of regularization of this Landau-Lifshitz model, which is effective field theory, which is not ultraviolet finite. And same story happens also on spin chain side. You're quantizing a kind of semi-classical action, but you're certainly not quantizing the whole system, but you are still not making a mistake, provided you use particular regularization. strangely enough, the same regularization, which is in the simplest leading order contribution, happens to be just zeta function regularization. And the results match, and that's how these, that's an explanation for this matching of quantum coefficients. For example, this D1 and A1, oh, A2 and D2, they can, the match, that matching can be demonstrated that way. Now, just before I get to interpolation, let me give you a very quick illustration that that's not, these fast strings are not the whole story if we really want to understand the spectrum of strings in ADS5S5. So for example, we can look at just strings moving ADS5 path, and there generically we should expect these interpolating functions appearing in the energy. So a basic example is just folded string rotating in the center of ADS. And for that string, classical energy looks like this, where S is spin, and F of lambda starts with square root of lambda. So this is classical coefficient. Then there are quantum corrections. So C1 is one loop quantum corrections, C2, etc. So here what we see is that completely different dependence on spin, this logarithm. And the function is just function of stopped coupling. And that should be the same function which appearing in perturbation theory, in gauge theory, where instead it's expanded in small lambda. But the function should be the same, that should be just different limits of the same function. So in fact, Lepata et al. Tried to compute higher order corrections in this expression, and here the first two coefficients are actually known. And one can try to interpolate between these functions. It looks like that indeed appears as two ends of the same function. But obviously one cannot prove it rigorously without knowing some rule of how this expansion is organized on both sides.
Why does, I mean, what suggests this error?
ADS CFT statement is that they must be the same. Now, you can draw these expansion, these functions, small lambda and large lambda, just like in this case of the entropy of n equal 4 theory, where you have two different limits, two different coefficients, 1 and 3 fourths, and you can compute corrections to both ends, and you see this one end is growing, another end is decreasing, so there should be a general function which interpolates between them. I'm saying what I know and what everybody else seems to know. It's not a proof. It's just.
But they could have those corrections could have been anything. There would have been an interpolating function.
Yeah, that's the intuition. Otherwise, there will be no ADS CFT.
You're trying to suggest that the interpolating function is monotonic or something, and then it would make it. Then that would.
Certainly, there should be no singularities in this function in between. Certainly, that's the case. Otherwise, so this folded string has a natural generalization, which is kind of spiky string, which is has several bits, and the corresponding operators have several bits containing these higher derivatives. And so the reason I'm bringing this up that one can also look at somewhat different operators. And these are just built out of gauge field strengths. In particular, there is a closed sector which is one loop closed in QCD or also in angular 4 theory, which is just built of self-dual components of F minute. So if you look at such operators, their anomalous dimensions happen to be described also by Heisenberg Hamiltonian, as pointed out by these people. And this is anti-ferromagnetic spin change. So the anomalous dimensions of such operators go indeed as length plus, in perturbation theory, they'll be just lambda times length plus lambda squared times length, etc. So they do scale as length. They're not suppressed as large length. So they're very far from any BPS operators or things like that. So for this antiferromagnetic chain, there is an antiferromagnetic vacuum, and there is a ferromagnetic ground state which lies up. Now, what are the dual string configurations? So the natural suggestion, well, turns out that looks like the natural dual to that operators are strings which lie only in ADS5, and you can have string which has the same SO4 quantum numbers, namely it has two equal spins in ADS5. So you can have two planes in ADS5 and respect to S3 and equal spins, and the energy of such string, classical energy, goes very strangely, like spin plus some strange power of spin. Now the meaning of that, one shouldn't really trust that expression, because it turns out this string solution is unstable. Now if you look at stability region of that solution, the energy actually goes as linear in spin. And spin here is exactly this L. So it's that kind of pattern. It looks like this two equal spin string is actually dual to operator, which is ferromagnetic ground state of the spin chain, which is essentially built out of commutative two covariant derivatives. So that form explains why it has two equal spins. So one spin is rotation in this plane and another spin is rotation in this other plane. Now, this is just to stress that for strings in ADS with these similar spinning strings, which are not fast, they are dual to operators which have dimension which scales as spin, not as with some interpolating function of lambda. So here none of the coefficients will be matching, but rather we need to know this interpolation function. And generalizing this, you can also have pulsating string which will have low energy, and it's presumably due to this anti-ferromagnetic vacuum of this spin chain. So the moral of that story was that in addition to these fast strings where we happen to match, which are due to locally BPS operators, which are really the simplest possible case generalizing BMN story, there are more complicated states where there will be functions of lambda which we need to understand one day. And hope to understand them is through going through various combination of data which we know on string side, on gauge theory side, guessing exact expressions in lambda, and then testing them against various perturbative results. And I would like to mention that hopefully Beisert and Staudacher will talk about that later. So let me turn to this story about deformations. Very quickly I'll go through example of generalization of that the story I just mentioned about these fast strings and long operators, which happen to be repeating itself in less supersymmetric case, in n equal 1 supersymmetric case, of this deformed n equal 4 theory or deformed ADS5 S5 string. So we'll have, as I mentioned earlier, we'll have another continuous parameter, so we'll have a generalization of a scaling limit, and the gauge theory will be essentially n equal 1 deformation of n equal 4 theory with superpotential, which will contain an extra parameter, which is Q, which is exponent of this beta parameter. The generic least trusted deformation has two structures in them, in it, and the second structure, its string dual, is not understood at the moment, so it appears to be much more complicated than the dual of that case, so we'll just set H prime to zero. So let me quickly remind you the gauge theory story, so we just review how this deformation appears and why in its meaning. So that's generic n equal 1 theory with some superpotential, and what we'd like to do is to keep the same field content of n equal 4 theory, namely three chiral multiplets, but you can introduce an arbitrary coupling for three chiral multiplets in a supermultiplet and ask when you preserve finiteness. And the normalization of superpotential means that beta function for this coupling essentially is proportional to a normalized dimension matrix for these phis. And at one loop you can compute it and find that if these anomalous dimensions vanish, you have zero beta function. Also, the NSVZ formula tells you that gauge coupling will also vanish. Now, the tricky point is to, since we have this anomalous dimension matrix, which is 3x3 matrix, it's not completely clear how to impose finiteness condition to all orders, but it turns out that one can, if one just assumes that three symmetry, then gamma becomes diagonal, and then there's just one condition. But it turns out one can argue that this is a general solution for for exactly marginal deformation. So that's what was the argument of Lee-Strauss. So if we just say that we have that free symmetry, then we have just one condition on four parameters. So gauge coupling, coefficients of these two structures, which I mentioned in the previous transparency, H and H prime, or here they are repeated, and parameter Q, which is one in N equal four theory, but generically is different from one in the deformed theory. So in what follows, I'll just set H prime. So this is a statement that we can always solve this, say determine, so if you set H prime to zero, you can determine H order by order in perturbation theory. It doesn't sound very useful, but there is a simplification. I want gamma to be zero to have conformal invariance, to have finite theory. If gamma is, if anomalous dimension is zero, beta function for these coefficients is zero, and gauge theory is not, gauge coupling is also not right. So that's the argument. I want finiteness, and I want conformal invariance for any gauge coupling. So exactly marginal deformation is this is a normal dimension for the field, not for the. This is a normal dimension for the 2 phi, which translates into beta function of this coupling. If a normal dimension is non-zero, this coupling will run, and moreover, this coupling will run, which is not what we want. Now, a remarkable observation is that, in fact, if we take n to infinity, if we take consider planar graphs only, and take this Q parameter to be just pure phase, so take beta real. The exact statement about conformal invariance is that this coefficient in front of deformation in the superpotential will be just Young-Mills coupling, as it is in N equal 4 theory. So just putting these phases here gives you conformal theory, N equal 1 conformal theory, which is exactly marginal deformation of N equal 4 theory. You don't need any condition which you need to solve order by order in perturbation theory. So why that happens has to do with the remarkable observation that that superpotential can be thought of as a star kind of non-commutative by analogy with non-commutative theories, where you can think of this star product being related to U1 charges of these scalars. And that was essentially one of the points of Lunyan and Modestina. And you can apply that interpretation and make analogy with non-commutative theories to argue that that's exactly marginal deformation. You don't need to any extra condition. And that was in a recent paper by Zanon et al. So that's the theory which we want to start with. And then you can look at how the structure of N equal 4 theories change in this theory. So it's essentially the same field content, just changed superpotential in a sense that you put some phases, exponent I pi beta in superpotential. So there's a new parameter beta, which is a priori free parameter in addition to torque coupling. Turns out there are a number of chiral primary operators, BPS operators, is vastly reduced. So in N equal 4 theory, we can take, say, any symmetrized product, say, of this complex phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, that'll be BPS operator. But here, the basic BPS operators are just four. It's essentially phi 1 in power j, phi 2, phi power j, phi 3, point power j. And in addition, there is another BPS operator, which is harder to write down explicitly, but it has U1 charges j, j, j. So it's each phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, each chiral combination of scalars appears in the same number of times. But they are ordered in various ways, so there are beta-dependent terms here. So we will see same pattern of BPS operators will be explicit on string side once we look at dual string. So essentially what happens is this 5 gets deformed, and if you look at geodesics, it will not be the same set of geodesics we had for S5, in fact, not all geodesics will correspond to BPS operators. In fact, the geodesics which minimize the energy with given charges, these will be only four, and then they will be exactly these ones, met due to these operators. So there are various other special operators, like you can look at operator which will be BPS in N equal 4 theory, just one, you have a large number of, just like one impurity operator in BMN language. That will be BPS, it will be just rotation, SU3 rotation of BPS operator in N equal 4 theory. But now these deformation breaks, I didn't mention that, deformation breaks SU4 to U1 in power cube. So we have three U1 symmetries only, instead of SU4, or manifest SU3, which we have here in this chiral basis. So these operators are no longer BPS. So it turns out that this operator is still BPS, but these get anomalous dimensions, and they can be computed explicitly. So they turned out to be very similar to BMN formula, with sine pi beta appearing under the square root. Again, there will be a string, that formula will follow from string theory. So that is just to say that we get kind of much richer structure. So various degeneracies which we have in N equal 4 theory get lifted by this beta parameter. So in a sense, beta is just like something analogous to some magnetic field you switch on and you see the, how the spectrum changes. And that's actually a useful feature of this example because it may teach us something useful about N equal 4 theory as well. Just probe it in a somewhat other, some by some other parameter. So what about anomalous dimension? So direct generalization of what of this statement that one loop dilatation operator acting on operators of that type built out of two complex scalars it was XXX Heisenberg in N equal 4 theory. In this beta deformed case, it turns out to be XXZ spin chain, and that's the Hamiltonian, so you have extra terms which vanish when beta equals zero. Now, scaling limit, so we would like to just to look at same spin wave type operators, slowly changing pattern of phi ones and phi twos along the long operator, because these will be able to compare to semi-classical string states. So the scaling limit in this case happened to be organized by taking J to infinity. So we look at, this is just gauge theory side, so we just look at one loop correction to the dilatation operator, first order in lambda, and then we take J large, so thermodynamic limit, with M or J1 over J2 fixed. Sorry, M and J taken to infinity, the ratio is fixed. To define that scaling limit, we also need to fix this product of beta times J. So that roughly means that beta goes to zero as 1 over J. So one need to take beta to zero in this particular way to define the scaling limit. And remarkably, the same will happen on string side. So you'll also need to take particular scaling limit to define the semi-classical string, or to define even supergravity background, a dual supergravity background. So taking that particular limit, one can derive this, what I mentioned as Landau-Lipschitz model, and that's how the story goes. You look at, to describe the spin wave states of this spin chain, you look at, you reformulate the story in terms of coherent states, coherent state path integral, just introducing, instead of spin operator or sigma matrix, you introduce a vector, unit vector, you can parameterize it by angles. And then the path integral in terms of the coherent states has an action which will be, first it will be just discrete action, discrete spin chain, which has some kind of p dot q term, Berry phase type term, plus expectation value of Hamiltonian. Familiar story for these spin chains, but so this is ferromagnetic case. So continuum limit here means taking very large J and trying to keep states which will correspond to the spin wave. So that's actually important. So if you try to define this limit J, you will be pushed into fixing this beta times J to be constant. So that's what you actually get for XXX model, and these are these extra beta-dependent terms. So that happens to be, if taking this limit, you get just what is called really Landau-Lipschitz model, an anisotropic version of it. So there are extra terms here, an extra potential sine squared potential, and an extra shift of this sigma derivative. So these terms are related to this beta deformation, and They can also be just written like this, and where beta bar is this fixed. That same action will come out of that action tells you what are the BPS states, because you need to minimize this potential. If theta prime is just zero, there will be beta times sine squared theta potential. That same action will come out of corresponding dual string theory. And then one can look at one can write down similar beta ansatz for the spin chain, and it will have very simple dependence on beta. Just if you're familiar with how it looks like for XXX model, it's just one face which one needs to put in the right hand side. And so this is Hamiltonian of this Landau-Lipschitz model, which describes the spin wave states of this spin chain, which are these operators, long operators with slowly changing content. Now, if beta is equal to zero, that's the old previous n equal 4 case. Beta non-zero changes the story. For example, BMN spectrum was lambda over j squared n squared. Now n is shifted by beta j. That's how beta enters in this story. For example, here it becomes non-trivial if you set n equals 0. So n equals 0 is precisely the zero modes for which are also related to these operators, and they have non-trivial dimension now. So their dimension is just proportional to beta squared. Do I have 5 more minutes? Okay. I'll try to give some idea how string side looks like. So one can look at SU3 sector similarly, and in SU3 sector one finds this non-trivial quantum state, actually, which is BPS state, with 3 equal J's. So that's a new feature of this story, which is very important. So in SU3 sector, there is a similar Landau-Lipschitz model. By SU3 sector, I mean it's deformed analog, so having all 3 complex scalars, operators built out of 3 complex scalars. So the similar spin chain, it's integrable, and that's what I actually pointed out by Berenstein and Cherkis, that for beta real, that spin chain is integrable. So this whole story on gauge theory side is very similar to kind of n equal 4 theory, with up to this lift of BPS many states. Now, string theory. Here we go back to what is S5 in terms of angles, and we can parameterize S5. To construct this dual string theory, it's useful to introduce parameterization of S5 in terms of angles, two angles of S2 and three angles of S2 and three angles of isometries of S5. So phi i's are 1, 2, 3, and there are rho I, which satisfy rho I squared, so 1. So they are parameterized by the two angles of S2. Now, what was observed by Lunin and Maldacena, that if we organize these phi's into in such a way that we preserve their sum, we'll not do nothing with the sum of these three angles, because the Killing spinners happen to depend on their sum, and we want to preserve supersymmetry. But rather look at that particular way of writing these three angles in terms of phi 1 and phi 2, these other phi's. This phi 1 and phi 2 correspond to U1 times U1 symmetry, which we'll actually preserve at the end. Then, if we do T-duality in one angle, just start with this ADS5, S5 string, or actually just supergravity background, do T-duality in one angle, then shift the second angle by beta phi 1, which is not an equivalence. It changes string theory, for example. Beta is not real, not integer. So beta is arbitrary real number. And then do T-duality back. The miracle which happens is you get regular geometry back. You have the same S5 beta deformed, the same topology, regular space. But this T-duality shift, T-duality, actually preserves conformal invariance of two-dimensional theories. It gives you well-defined string theory back. And the bonus of it is that one can actually argue that the corresponding string theory is again classically integrable, at least classically integrable. And as I mentioned, the gauge theory side is also looks like the dilatation operator is integrable. So how you see this integrability, essentially T-duality is a well-cheat transformation. You just trade scalar for its momentum. So you can map each solution of string equations without imposing, say, periodicity of a string in sigma into some solution of classical string equations in this dual geometry. So you can pretty much relate classical solutions to classical solutions.
Is topologically an S5?
Yes.
No B field?
There are all sorts of other fields, because T-duality, you have Ramon field. So once you do T-duality, it's not just metric, it's going to change. You really have all other stuff. So that's how geometry actually looks pretty complicated, but the rules of construction are very simple. So that simplicity pays off. So in gauge theory side, actually it's much, much simpler than it looks at the first sight. So that's how this geometry looks like. So it's essentially, this is S5 metric in terms of this rho I, and rho I is again a unit three vector, and phi I are just three angles. These are three planes of S5 with the constraint that rho I is squared to 1. Now, deformed geometry involves putting a function g of that type with beta tilde being square root of lambda times beta in this place and this place, and there is a beta explicitly sitting here. And this is sum of three angles. Plus, you have dilaton related to this function g. You have B2 field related to this beta, etc. You also have C2 and F5. Which F5 is Ramon flux, which we originally had, but now it's also deformed by... But it's not actually necessary to think that way. You can just start with ADS5, S5 string action, and write down a different action which will be corresponding to the dual geometry, which is obtained by systematic Wolff transformation. Then what the story which follows is looking at classical solutions, looking at these limits of fast strings, and getting exactly the same results which I alluded to in appearing in ankle four theory. So in particular, you find that same Landau-Lifshitz model from that apparently much more complicated classical string action written for this dual geometry. So you just get the same action, which translates into statement that the same, you'll get the same energies of these strings, which will match dimensions of these operators, etc. So the same integrable structure, etc. Moreover, quantum corrections also match.
Well,
so
part of the degrees of freedom, right?
Yes, I mentioned. Yes, so what happens for the leading one loop correction? So that what is written here, we can look at particular solution, which is this exactly that solution which I mentioned earlier, with two equal spins. Now, that expression which is written here is the expression which you get for the leading lambda tilde term in the string computation. So what's written here is some characteristic frequency, and what is subtracted is the contribution of fermions and other bosonic modes. And these are zero mode contributions. Now, how you can reinterpret this result? So it turns out that this first term is really the most important. And that's what comes out of quantization of that action, directly quantization of that action. And that action comes out of spin chain. So if you do analysis of spin chain to find exactly the same term in this expansion, which will be correction to thermodynamic limit of this spin chain, finite size correction, first finite size correction, you obtain exactly that same expression. And how you can understand this? Well, this action comes out of spin chain, and you can indeed drop high derivative corrections because they happen to be suppressed by higher power of J. So there is that action, and even quantizing that action happens to be a bridge between these two pictures. Now, you may say why we don't see fermions. And in fact, we do see them. We need to, if we just quantize that action, we just get this first term, which will not be finite. We need a regularization. We need to subtract something out of that square root to make it finite. But what we subtract is very simple. It turns out that the fermions here contribute very simple corrections. So it's, again, much in line with this effective field theory philosophy. So this is effective field theory. When you quantize it, you need really to keep in mind that that's not the exact answer. You need some regularization, you need some counter terms. And that's the statement here. So these are counter terms, but this part, which is the non-trivial part, is captured by that action, and that action appears from both sides of the duality. So in fact, remarkably, we can push this philosophy even further to to the next order correction. It still seems to be matching to leading order in lambda. So first order in lambda tilde, but higher order in 1 over j. I guess I need to... So same story for SU3 sector. Again, you can look at string side, and well, maybe I'll just mention quite sort of funny story about geodesics in this space. So a priori, given some space, a priori you wouldn't expect geodesics to be described by integral model. Why that would happen? In this case, this geometry looks pretty complicated, but it turns out geodesics are indeed described by integral model, which is just Newman model, or what's called Newman Rosenhatius system, one-dimensional system. So it's on a sphere, you would just have for these three, for two angles of S2, you will have just this term plus 1 over rho squared potential. But here, in addition to that, you get an extra term which is related to beta. Now, why that action appears here? Because it turns out that geodesics in this deformed geometry are images of certain circular strings, of certain rotating and pulsating strings in the original geometry. I mentioned that classical solutions are kind of related to each other through this T-duality transformation, just classical T-duality transformation and shift. And that action, indeed, in S5 describes rotating and pulsating strings. Here it just describes geodesics, point-like strings. So it's not surprising because T-duality indeed can map strings into states, point-like states, etc. Momentum modes into winding modes. But here, this is actually happens to be a useful picture. So that way we can understand which BPS states would be. BPS states are generically just images of BPS states of in original geometry, but strings and geodesics are related in some funny ways. One can repeat the same analysis of BMN limit. Roughly speaking, the same what was done in Ankle 4 theory can repeat it here. It's quite remarkable that it all works same way up to much more complicated issues of what kind of vacuum you can have for these spin chains, etc. So just to conclude that this real deformation story gives us well-defined string dual of a well-defined conformal field theory, perturbatively defined conformal field theory, ankle one conformal field theory, which at large n, it's all large n story. At large n, it's a kind of another tractable and testable example of ADS-CFT. It's integrable theory on both string and gauge sides, at least in these limits, which we are considering on both sides. And theory is actually much simpler than it looks, and the reason for that is the systematic way how it's constructed on string side. And there is also a kind of reason for simplicity on gauge theory side. This star product interpretation of this deformation is remarkably important for understanding various simple features of gauge theory perturbations compared to more general deformation. So hopefully we can learn something useful out of that story. So in particular, we can try to break supersymmetry further. In fact, that happens to be a useful idea. Well, there is a natural generalization of that story to three deformation parameters, not just one beta, but three beta, one beta, two beta, three. Doing the same TST in three angles independently breaks supersymmetry, but it gives you as good string theory as this example. And you can also think of what kind of gauge theory it defines, and looks like that would be perturbatively conformal theory again, non-supersymmetric, but what about in perturbation theory, you'll need to adjust coupling. It would be interesting to explore this further, but this picture that you can do TDUality and shifts on string side actually suggests that that must be a well-defined conformal theory, if we believe in this idea of CFT correspondence. So let me just mention that there are various other technical issues, which normal features of the spin chains, etc., and this JJJ state, this quantum vacuum, and there are understanding what happens in this case is kind of interesting. Generalization to complex beta case happened to be much more complicated. So beta, the deformation parameter in Lee-Strassler case, can be complex. On string side, that construction of the corresponding dual geometry suggested by Lunin and Moldaceni was involving S-duality. And that is something where you lose control over string theory. You really, if you apply S-duality, you don't really know microscopically what is going to happen. And indeed, this case, you lose integrability in general. Gauge side is not integrable for in three-spin sector and probably in two-spin sector at higher than one loop. And same on string size. It's more complicated story. And that actually emphasizes that simplicity is kind of rather rare in this story. So more general deformations probably are more complicated. So I mentioned already this non-supersymmetric three-parameter case, and I just stress that this is rather straightforward generalization of all aspects of this single beta story, but it's not supersymmetric. There are various interesting issues like tachyons and stability, and that may be interesting to explore. Thank you.